The princess had no occasion to order the private door to be opened to Aladdin, for her women were so disposed from the great hall to the foot of the staircase that the word was no sooner given that the magician was fallen than the door was immediately opened. As soon as Aladdin entered the hall, he saw the magician stretched backward on the sofa. The princess rose from her seat and ran overjoyed to embrace him. But he stopped her and said, "Princess, it is not yet time. Let me be left alone a moment while I endeavour to transport you back to China as speedily as you were brought from thence." When the princess, her women, and eunuchs were gone out of the hall, Aladdin shut the door, and going directly to the dead body of the magician, opened his vest, took out the lamp, which was carefully wrapped up, as the princess had told him, and unfolding and rubbing it, the genie immediately appeared. "Genie," said Aladdin, "I have called to command thee, on the part of thy good mistress, this lamp, to transport this palace instantly into China, to the place from whence it was brought hither." The genie bowed his head in token of obedience and disappeared. Immediately the palace was transported into China, and its removal was only felt by two little shocks, the one when it was lifted up, the other when it was set down, and both in a very short interval of time. From the time of the transportation of Aladdin's palace, the princess's father had been inconsolable for the loss of her. Before the disaster, he used to go every morning into his closet to please himself with viewing the palace. He went now many times in the day to renew his tears, and plunge himself into the deepest melancholy, by reflecting how he had lost what was most dear to him in this world. The very morning of the return to the palace, the Sultan went into his closet to indulge his sorrows. Absorbed in himself, and in a pensive mood, he cast his eyes toward the spot, expecting only to see an open space. But perceiving the vacancy filled up, he at first imagined the appearance to be the effect of a fog. Looking more attentively, he was convinced beyond the power of doubt that it was his son-in-law's palace. Joy and gladness succeeded to sorrow and grief. He returned immediately into his apartment, and ordered a horse to be saddled and brought to him without delay, which he mounted that instant, thinking he could not make haste enough to the palace. Aladdin, who foresaw what would happen, rose that morning by daybreak, put on one of the most magnificent habits his wardrobe afforded, and went up into the hall of 24 windows, from whence he perceived the Sultan approaching, and got down soon enough to receive him at the foot of the great staircase. "Aladdin," said the Sultan, "I cannot speak to you till I have seen and embraced my daughter." The happy father was then led to the princess's apartment, and embraced her with his face bathed in tears of joy. The Sultan was some time before he could open his lips, so great was his surprise and joy to find his daughter again, after he had given her up for lost, and the princess, upon seeing her father, let fall tears of rapture and affection. At last the Sultan broke silence, and said, "I would believe, daughter, your joy to see me makes you seem as little changed as if no misfortune had befallen you. Yet I cannot be persuaded but that you have suffered much alarm, for a large palace cannot be so suddenly transported as yours has been, without causing great fright and apprehension. I would have you tell me all that has happened, and conceal nothing from me." The princess, who took great pleasure in giving the Sultan the satisfaction he demanded, said, "If I appear so little altered, I beg of your majesty to consider that I received new life yesterday morning by the presence of my dear husband and deliverer, Aladdin, whom I looked upon and bewailed as lost to me. My greatest suffering was to find myself forced not only from your majesty, but from my dear husband, not only from the love I bore him, but from the uneasiness I laboured under through fear that he, though innocent, might feel the effects of your anger. As to what relates to my transportation, I was myself the innocent cause of it." To persuade the Sultan of the truth of what she said, she gave him a full account of how the African magician had disguised himself and offered to change new lamps for old ones, how she had amused herself in making that exchange, how the palace and herself were carried away and transported into Africa, with the magician, who was recognized by two of her women and the eunuch who made the exchange of the lamp, when he had the audacity, after the success of his daring enterprise, to propose himself for her husband. how he persecuted her till Aladdin's arrival, how they had concerted measures to get the lamp from him again, and the success they had fortunately met with by her dissimulation in inviting him to supper and giving him the cup with the powder prepared for him. "For the rest," added she, "I leave it to Aladdin to recount." Aladdin had not much to tell the Sultan, but only said, "When the private door was opened, I went up into the great hall, where I found the magician lying dead on the sofa. And as I thought it not proper for the princess to stay there any longer, I desired her to go down into her own apartment with her women and eunuchs. As soon as I was alone and had taken the lamp out of the magician's breast, I made use of the same secret he had done to remove the palace and carry off the princess. And by that means the palace was reconveyed to the place where it stood before, and I have the happiness to restore the princess to your majesty. But that your majesty may not think that I impose upon you, if you will give yourself the trouble to go up into the hall, you may see the magician punished as he deserved." The Sultan rose instantly and went into the hall, where, when he saw the African magician dead, and his face already livid by the strength of the poison, he embraced Aladdin with great tenderness and said, "My son, be not displeased at my proceedings against you. They arose from my paternal love, and therefore you ought to forgive the excesses to which it hurried me." "Sir," replied Aladdin, "I have not the least reason to complain of your majesty's conduct, since you did nothing but what your duty required. This infamous magician, the beast of men, was the sole cause of my misfortune. When your majesty has leisure, I will give you an account of another villainous action he was guilty of toward me, which was no less black and base than this."
"I will take an opportunity, and that very shortly," replied the Sultan, "to hear it. But in the meantime, let us think only of rejoicing."
The Sultan then commanded the drums, trumpets, cymbals, and other instruments of music to announce his joy to the public, and a festival of 10 days to be proclaimed for the return of the princess and Aladdin. Within a few years afterward, the Sultan died in a good old age, and as he left no male children, the princess Badr-ul-Budur, as lawful heir of the throne, succeeded him, and communicating the power to Aladdin, they reigned together many years, and left a numerous and illustrious progeny.